All right, welcome back to Third String Podcast. I know we've been off for a couple of weeks. Pete and I have both have had some very busy work schedules to work around, and that was obviously right in the middle of Super Bowl season and all of that, but now we're back, and I think we'll start off with talking about the Super Bowl, Pete, but welcome back to Third String. How are you doing, my man? I heard you guys are all sick over there. Sorry to hear that.
Yeah, I'm doing well. We're surviving the great plague of 2020. This fortunately, it's not the coronavirus, but it's definitely something nasty floating around here in the Las Vegas winter. But we're hanging in. How about you, my friend?
We are also hanging in. Fortunately, all of us are pretty healthy right now. But as you know, we were not healthy early January. I just think these like dry, high desert winters are pretty tough on the lungs and respiratory tracts.
Yeah, and I know it's the same out there in Colorado, but the wind just howls. And, when it's not bringing the cold weather, it's still bringing around all the dust and all the junk in the soil. And especially out here in the desert, it's rough as that wind blows. And I know you up there at elevation, it is even more rough because yours brings a lot of snow.
Yeah, what is Vegas? Is it like 2,500 feet elevation?
Okay. We sit, I think it's like 2332 is what we're at.
Wow. So that was a close guess.
Not too bad. Man. Yeah. Not bad. Not bad.
If only my, my betting predictions were as accurate. All right, man. We have a lot to talk about.
You make a lot of money in this town.
I know, right? Seriously. We, speaking of in that town, we still need to talk about, me coming out there for the NFL draft. So let's do that. We'll do that post podcast. So we got some stuff to talk about today, Pete. We have not yet done our impressions of the Super Bowl. So let's start off with that for our small ball segment. And then, for Take Shop, let's talk about this Mookie Betts trade. I am looking at a tweet only 6 minutes old as of right now from Jeff Passan, who says the trade that will send Mookie Betts to the Los Angeles Dodgers has been agreed upon. And we'll get into all the drama surrounding this trade and how this has been, suspended for, is it 48, 72 hours now? It's something ridiculous. This has been in limbo for much longer than it should have been. We can talk about all of that, and I can give you my my hot take on trades. And then for our cleanup segment, the final segment, let's talk about the XFL, because I've watched a little bit this weekend, haven't had time to watch a ton, but what I've seen was pretty fun. So we'll talk about all that. But Pete, let's go to the first section, small ball. First of all, Super Bowl Chiefs 49ers. We were texting the day of, just before the game. You said, who do you have? And I said, I've got the Chiefs. Can't bet against, I'm sorry. I said the Niners. I said, you can't bet against the defense, right? Hard to bet against Patrick Mahomes. I really want Reed to get his Lombardi trophy because he was in Philly all those years and couldn't quite do it. Big Patrick Reed fan, or Andy Reid fan, big Patrick Mahomes fan, but you can't bet against a great defense. And that's what the Niners had. You said, no, I'm going to go with the Chiefs. They start slow, so you'll see them start slow and end up behind late, but they'll turn it on, and I believe in Andy Reid and Patrick Mahomes. And you, as is normally the case when we have these discussions about predictions, you ended up being the prescient one, so congratulations to you, Pete. But beyond that, what did you think of the Super Bowl? First of all, did your parenting duties allow you to watch the entire Super Bowl?
It did. I think the first half it was on kind of in the background, paying attention, but in the background. I really got my kids excited for the halftime show coming up. I thought it'd be a lot of singing and dancing, and it was not exactly the halftime show I was expecting.
So on that note, did you stop it partway through and say, you kids are not watching this?
No, fortunately, because they both got pretty disinterested pretty quickly.
Okay.
I think when they didn't recognize the music, they kind of moved on, fortunately. So we just let it play in the background as we kept going along our day. But I know a lot of people turned it off. Probably another discussion for another time. But yeah, that was we've had a couple interesting Super Bowl halftime shows recently. So I'm wondering what the NFL is going to do going forward with that.
Yeah, it's a good question. I mean, they went very vanilla for a few years after the Janet Jackson incident, but now I think they're creeping back to the pretty provocative and suggestive shows that have people turning it off for their kids. We didn't have that, so it wasn't on in our house during the halftime show, because what I did was, you know, had the first half on in the background. We were doing family dinner and stuff, so it was hard for me to stay totally engaged for the first half. But then during halftime, I actually drove over to my brother-in-law's house. He lives across town from me, and then showed up just as the halftime show was ending. So I really didn't even see any of the halftime show either, and then watched the second half. So it was actually kind of perfect timing in that sense. But based on what I've heard about the halftime show, you know, lots of good vocals. I don't want to take that away from J-Lo and Shakira, but sounds like there was lots of other stuff involved there that was not child appropriate. So it's too bad. I mean, it would be fun if it was just like, you know, benign singing and dancing and impressive performance in that way. But when artists have to sexualize everything, it's kind of frustrating because it's harder to get kids involved in that. You don't want to expose your kids to that. I mean, why would I want my 3-year-old to watch that, right? There's no argument for doing that.
Well, and you look at last year where Adam Levine is ripping his shirt off.
Exactly.
I don't know if the NFL is pulling back the how much quality control they have over that and what the and letting the artists do their thing, but you go back even a couple of years ago with Bruno Mars and how great of a show that was and how, yes, it was vanilla, but the music was great. That's the kind of stuff I'm hoping comes back to the Super Bowl halftime shows. But I think the NFL knows that they are not necessarily a dying breed, but I think they know that viewership is down. It was not this year. It was I actually saw that more people watched the Super Bowl this year than voted for the president in 2016. But overall, I think viewership for the NFL playoffs has been down a little. So I think the NFL is trying to figure out how they can re-energize this. And we'll talk about the XFL here when we're just about to wrap it up. But I think the NFL is really trying to find itself again all of a sudden.
Yeah, I think that's right. The on-field product has been better this year, I think, than it was last year. I know you've had some frustrations watching the on-field product, and there are lots of officiating problems. You know, the whole pass interference stuff, like nobody knows what pass interference is even still. There are lots of things to fix in the offseason. For my part, I'm still very conflicted about watching football because of the concussion stuff. You know, watching these guys potentially throw their futures away with these repetitive subconcussive and concussive hits. And we could talk about the XFL on that note a little bit, too. I think they've made some important strides. The kickoff, for example, needs to make its way into the NFL. I don't know if you saw the kickoff at all in the XFL. Pretty cool. But going back to the Super Bowl, for the on-field product here, it went about what I would expect for the first half to three quarters. Maybe even better for the Niners than I expected. I mean, Patrick Mahomes he came out of here, obviously, as MVP. And with everyone anointing him, if they hadn't already, the best player in the NFL. And I agree with that claim. He certainly is. But I mean, is this heresy to question whether or not he really deserved the MVP nod for that game? Because through three and a third quarters, he was actually pretty bad, right? I mean, in what other games has Patrick Mahomes thrown two picks? It doesn't normally happen. And he wasn't very good. And then he was good when it counted. But I don't know. What do you think? Did he, was he supposed to be the MVP? Did he deserve it?
No, I think like you're talking about, it was completely the air around him and the anointing of him. I mean, he made some incredible plays down the stretch, but don't forget for the first 3.5 quarters, it was the Chiefs running game on offense that was really keeping them in that game more than anything else. And yeah, their defense was playing very, very well as well. But Pat Mahomes, after that, what was a good challenge by Kyle Shanahan, kind of just chucked it up there 45 yards downfield, and that's what changed the entire game. So he did some great things, the threat from his legs, the ability to throw the sidearm pass, but there were just a lot of plays throughout those first 3.5 quarters that it looked like the Niners had him figured out, and it's just too tough to shut him down for a full fourth quarters. They needed a little luck to help him out. But yeah, I was a little bit surprised to see Pat Mahomes as the MVP, but I guess it goes to show you that the MVP, even in the Super Bowl, is sometimes kind of a popularity contest.
Yeah, well, I think, the highest odds for the MVP were A, Patrick Mahomes, and B, Jimmy Garoppolo, just because historically it's normally the quarterback, mm-hmm. unless you have a defensive player who makes like two picks, including a pick six, or a defensive player who makes like 4 or 5 sacks single-handedly and a strip sack, forced fumble, recovery, whatever, or you have an offensive player who has like a 3 or 4 TD performance, you're just going to see it go to the quarterback because that's how these things go. You know, for better or worse, the quarterback is seen as the most important pivotal player, probably mostly accurately, but I think it just makes it that much harder. So I'm looking at Damian Williams, for example. He's someone who I think had an alternative case for MVP. 17 attempts for 104 yards. And one rushing touchdown, one receiving touchdown. So a 2-touchdown performance from Damian Williams. I mean, what a cool story for that guy. But he's one who I think has a plausible case for MVP. Probably not Hill, who had no touchdowns despite 105 passing yards. But I'm just not totally sold on it being Patrick Mahomes just because he was phenomenal for half a quarter and helped them come back. I don't know, but I'm a big Patrick Mahomes fan, so I'm not trying to knock him. I think it just sort of highlights the challenge of selecting an MVP. To me, this is almost a game without a true MVP. You know, you obviously have to anoint one; somebody has to win the prize. But it was a team performance, and it was almost an example where the Chiefs just threw it away, and then they ended up having one of their trademark performances in the final half of the fourth quarter to seal the game.
Yeah, it was. Honestly, I think the NFL has to be happy, and sort of the fans, that for the most part, it was a good game. I mean, there was the questionable pass interference call at the end of the first half, which I think by the letter of the law, who was that on? That was on Kitten, right?
Yep.
I think by the letter of the law, it was officiated correctly. We've just seen it officiated incorrectly and ignored so many times that it made it questionable. But other than that, it was a competitive game. It was a quick Super Bowl by time. Normally those games go at least 4 hours, and this one was a little under 3.5. And not that you're looking for an incredibly fast Super Bowl, but it's nice when it doesn't drag out with tons and tons of reviews, slow play, lots of punts. I think the NFL and the fans have to be pretty happy that this is the way it went out. And just like you said, the product on the field this year was much, much better than it, I would argue, has been for the last 2 or 3 years. And I think that was highlighted by just two really good teams who were good really the entire year. I know that it was questionable actually the night that I was with you in Colorado when Pat Mahomes broke his kneecap. But otherwise, the Chiefs and the Niners were, I thought, clearly the two of the top four teams in the NFL all year, and they came to play. I feel a little bad for Kyle Shanahan, and I know that is an unpopular opinion, but you just look at how much his game plan changes and how creative he normally is and how much it all dries up. You got to wonder at this point if that guy is so far in his own head, what's he going to do going forward? I mean, right now, that is his legacy, and he has been a great offensive coordinator for multiple teams, coached in Super Bowls. I mean, had a guy like Jimmy Garoppolo playing in the Super Bowl. I mean, he did some fantastic things, but right now all we remember is Kyle Shanahan doesn't know how to coach in the fourth quarter with a lead.
Yeah, that's exactly right. By the way, did you say Kitten instead of Kittle? I think you might have said there was a pass interference penalty on Kitten, which is a great nickname for George Kittle, and I'm a huge supporter.
Yeah, we'll stick with that. We'll stick with that. You know, there was a Kitten Bowl going on that day. There was a Puppy Bowl going on. A lot of names to remember for any good analyst.
I love it. I agree with you. I do feel bad for Kyle Shanahan. I mean, to a degree, how can you not, right? Anybody who loses a Super Bowl, you got to feel bad for at least a little bit. I was listening to a podcast with some beat reporters for the Eagles, and they were talking about being in the locker room after a Super Bowl loss, and guys are just like literally crying. You know, these grown men who have played hundreds of football games throughout their careers, they make it to the big show. There can only be one that emerges victorious. And if you don't, that's just crushing. I mean, all of the work that it takes to get to that point and you miss out. For Kyle Shanahan, it's even more painful because now it's happened to him twice. And he has the illustrious distinction of being, the only person to throw away a double digit lead in multiple Super Bowl games. I think if I'm remembering the stat correctly. And that's, I mean, at the very least, it's a very small club, right? And now he's in it, and that's got to hurt. That's got to sting a lot. So I also feel bad for him. It's a tough thing. How about Jimmy Garoppolo? You think he's the real deal? He had a pretty rough game as well.
I think Jimmy Garoppolo is exactly who we thought he was, that he is not going to be the dynamic guy Pat Mahomes is. He's not going to be the guy at the line of scrimmage changing up plays and just showing this incredible ability to read defenses like Peyton Manning. But I would argue if you are 25 of the 30-something teams in the NFL, Jimmy Garoppolo is the guy I want. He's going to manage the game effectively. He's going to make pretty good decisions. I mean, that one interception he threw I knew was a little questionable. Otherwise, I thought he was pretty good with the ball. I thought the bigger story with Jimmy Garoppolo is how little it appeared Kyle Shanahan trusted him. down the stretch there in the at the end of the first half. And it wasn't until the fourth quarter when things were starting to get dicey. And we're watching the punter hold the ball for 40 seconds on the previous drive. And then Garoppolo comes out and has to throw. And he gets out of his, really what he'd been doing for the past 2.5 quarters at that point. And that appeared to rattle him. So I think if I'm an NFL GM, I would be very happy having Jimmy Garoppolo as my starting guy under center. Just understanding that he's probably not a Hall of Famer. He's not going to be the glamorous guy that Pat Mahomes is, or Deshaun Watson is, or Lamar Jackson. That he's going to get in there, he's going to make pretty sound decisions, but he's probably not going to be the guy to set the world on fire.
Yeah, I think that's mostly accurate. The stuff about before halftime, how much Shanahan trusts or doesn't trust Garoppolo, I think people make a little bit too much of that. I don't really see it as a reflection of how much you trust your quarterback. I really think it's, you know, Shanahan like trying to just play it safe, right? Like he knows that he's given away a lead 28-3 before. Everyone knows that. And he's like, you know, I can't give the Chiefs the ball back with time on the clock. That's why I'm not going to call a timeout, et cetera. I'm going to play this smart and play conservatively. Now, you know, as like armchair quarterbacks after the fact, or even in the moment, we look at it and we're like, no, you got to be aggressive and you got to score. And, you know, I understand Shanahan's point. I do think, though, you do have to be aggressive and score. It reminds me of 2 years ago. You probably remember when the Jaguars went to the AFC Championship against the Patriots. Yeah. And there was like something like a full minute on the clock before the half. And Doug Marrone had Blake Bortles just kneel it out. And I was like, yep. What are you doing? Like, because they had a, I think they had a narrow, I'll have to look at the stats. I'm probably messing up the story. I think they had like a touchdown of a lead, or maybe it was like a 20-10 lead. And they're like, we just have to conserve what we have now. We don't want it to get worse. We don't want to give Tom Brady the ball back, et cetera. So we can't actually try to get yardage. We can't try to get field goal range or get a touchdown. We just have to kneel it out. We'll go into the locker room and live to fight another half. Obviously, we know how that went. They lost the game. And most people pointed to that decision by Doug Marrone to just kneel it out for the final 60 or 80 seconds or whatever it was in that game. And you can't do that. You cannot do that on these playoff stages in football games. It doesn't work that way. You have to take whatever opportunity you have to score. If it's in front of you, you take it.
I would argue you can't do this in any of these big games. I mean, I don't care if it's the national championship in college basketball or the Super Bowl. I mean, the second you ask your team to get out of the rhythm they have established by building up a lead, changing up the game plan, and forcing every person on that field to start looking at the clock instead of looking at the play in front of them, it just changes the dynamic. The team on the other side knows that you are trying to bleed clock and you have no interest whatsoever in doing anything crazy, so they're allowed to stiffen up a little, get a little tighter on the line of scrimmage. And then if you're the team who's on offense, the message is, don't screw this up, we're almost there, instead of keep being yourselves and keep playing. So I think you look at these teams where, yeah, you'll see in the national championship in college basketball, a team is up by 14 with 6 minutes left, and all of a sudden they're using the entire shot clock when they've been an up-tempo team the entire time.
Right.
You see this in every sport where all of a sudden we're just playing keep away instead of playing the game that not only got us here, but got us to this position to have a lead. So I think the second the 49ers did that, it started sending the message to both teams that the game was changing very rapidly in front of them.
Yeah, I think it's absolutely right. I'm looking up that 2018 AFC Championship game to see how accurately I remembered the story. There's a New York Times article about this comeback. And so, yeah, the New England Patriots were down 20-10 early in the fourth quarter, obviously ended up coming back to win 24-20. And I'm trying to see the exact score at the time of halftime, but it was just ugly. I remember watching that and it was like, the lesson here is you don't run out the clock and you don't pass up a possible opportunity to score. You just don't do it. You can't.
And I remember you and I talking during that game saying, is this the end of Tom Brady playing in Super Bowls?
Yep.
We couldn't believe it was going to be the Jags. And yeah, that was,
yes, it was,
that it was the Sunday afternoon game. I remember that.
Yep. 14-10 is what they went into halftime with. So they decided to save their 4-point lead, which is obviously not enough. And what'd they lose by? 4 points. So there it is. Okay, Pete, let's go on to Take Shop. So I'm sure you've seen all this stuff about the Mookie Betts trade. First of all,
just a little.
I saw somebody on Twitter earlier today say that the Boston Red Sox have managed to make the New York Knicks for the past 72 hours not the worst run franchise in sports. And it's pretty fitting because the Red Sox, normally pretty savvy front office. They normally know what they're doing. In this case, there's a couple of problems. First, they decide to trade Mookie Betts, who, for my money, I don't know about you, we'd have to have this conversation. For my money, he's the second best position player in all of baseball behind Mike Trout.
Yeah, he's up there for sure.
And yeah, it's, I mean, it's not controversial to say he's a top five guy, right? Like, maybe controversial to say he's number two. You could have some people who would contest that. You know, Mike Trout, obviously number one. That's clear. Mookie's somewhere between two and five. For my money, I would say two. The Red Sox have another year of team control for Mookie, but his, you know, if they keep him, basically, they're going to hit luxury tax penalties. They don't want to do that, and so they decide to trade him. And their thinking is, well, we only have him for another year anyway. If we trade him, we're really only losing a year of Mookie because we're not going to be able to retain him after that, because he'd put us over the luxury tax with what he's going to demand, because he's in the realm of a $40 million a year type player, just with the wins above replacement that he brings. So the Red Sox decide to do this. It's obviously a huge blow to their fan base. There are lots of hot takes across the internet about how the Red Sox, who are a multi-billion-dollar franchise, are just afraid of, you know, paying tens of millions or, you know, $100 million in luxury tax, and so they're trading away the game's second best player. I think a lot of that's accurate. I also think that, you know, you make your own choices as a franchise. And if you have, you know, set yourself up with the rest of the players on your payroll, to a degree that you're going to put yourself over luxury tax with keeping your one player, that's poor planning. And so the problems go deeper than just how can you make this decision in this moment. And really, I think a lot of the blame probably goes back to like Dave Dombrowski. And, you know, he built the championship team in 2018, but I think he also sort of mortgaged the future in that respect. So now it becomes harder to do things like afford Mookie. But that's the first level of controversy here, that the Red Sox traded Mookie at all. And the original trade terms were, it was actually a three-team trade. I'm looking at MLBTradeRumors.com to look at the original terms here. So let's see, a three-team trade. All right, I'm going to read directly from MLBTradeRumors.com. The Dodgers are reportedly set to acquire Betts, David Price, and significant cash considerations in a deal that will send young outfielder Alex Verdugo to Boston and right-hander Kenta Maeda to the Twins. Minnesota, meanwhile, will send flame-throwing young righty Brusdar Graterol to the Red Sox to complete the swap. So Boston receives Brusdar Graterol, what they thought was a starting pitcher, maybe eventually a relief pitcher, and Alex Verdugo from the Dodgers. The Twins get Kenta Maeda, who was good last year, and the Dodgers get Price and Betts. So that's what happened. And then that trade was announced. That trade was treated as final by people in sports media. And then things really kind of went off the rails, because the Red Sox, maybe reacting to a legit medical issue, maybe also, and this is speculative on my part, but maybe also responding to the extreme fan reaction of them trading Mookie Betts. They started to look for an out, and they, you know, obviously whenever these trades happen, the players have to go through medical reviews, right, to make sure that everything looks good and the teams know what they're getting. And in the case of Graterol, the Twins pitcher who was supposed to go to the Red Sox, there was some sort of issue with his medicals. And it's not totally clear what happened. This is all pretty opaque, as it should be with the case of players' medical details, right? But it seems to be the case that Boston thought they were getting a potential starter. Something in the medicals made them think that this was going to be a reliever. So, you know, something indicated probably this person, Graterol, would need to have a lighter workload, et cetera, over the course of his career. Whatever. I don't exactly know. It seemed a little bit shaky to me, a little bit flimsy. And I do suspect, like you just said, that there was some public opinion playing into this, right? With the Red Sox like, oh, shoot, maybe we made a mistake. Is there any way we can get out of this? Maybe we can kind of scapegoat some guy's medicals. So that's what happened. As of the start of this podcast, Jeff Passan saying that Mookie Betts is now going to Los Angeles. So this was a saga several days in the making. The original terms of the trade came out on the 4th, February 4th, Dodgers to acquire Betts. So we're now on day seven of this, this, you know, saga, this trade saga. And it has only now reached a conclusion. So almost a full week to get this ironed out. And if Jeff Passan is to be believed, it finally is ironed out now. But this is my thing, Pete. I know I've been talking for a long time. I want to hear your thoughts on this as well. Since this is Take Shop, I need to have some sort of take on this. I think that reporters, now I'm not in favor of any sort of censorship of reporters, so I don't think this should be like a law or an MLB policy, but I think reporters need to, among themselves, create some sort of agreement that they do not report on the terms of trades until players clear medicals. What do you think? First of all, what do you think about the trade itself? And then give me your thoughts on my take. Maybe my take's terrible. This is totally half-baked. I literally thought of it as I was like talking about the Mookie Betts saga. I went into Take Shop not having a take, and this is my take that I'm going with. So maybe it's a terrible idea, but let's talk it up.
So my initial thoughts on the trade, I would be devastated if I was a Red Sox fan, but I would not be surprised. I think when they fired Dombrowski, which honestly surprised me.
Me too, yeah.
I think that was the indicator that things were kind of coming apart. And you look at that Red Sox clubhouse and how much it has ebbed and flowed here over the past few years. I mean, heck, we can go back to the chicken wings and beer incidents of the late 2010s in the Red Sox clubhouse. That clubhouse, for some reason, has always been a spot that has just been high drama. And I think when you saw the Red Sox honestly come out of nowhere with a rookie manager and win it all in 2018, and obviously we know of the connections to the Astros and how much that might have factored in either way, it felt like the Red Sox were not as genuine of a talented team as it came across. And what I mean by that is the talent on the field was very clear, but it was obvious that they were winning based on talent alone and not a lot of team chemistry, not a lot of gelling. It seemed like they were really living and dying day by day. And honestly, they got hot at the right time and kind of rode that. And obviously, I know that they had a phenomenal regular season. But the way that they were winning those games, it seemed like there was just not a lot of chemistry backing it up. So you watch that team in 2018. Then you watch almost the exact same team have a terrible 2019 season. Then you see their manager get fired because of his involvement with the Astros scandal of 2017. You saw the GM get fired a few months before. And then you heard the rumors that Mookie Betts was not even happy in Boston anymore and didn't want to be there. So I think if I'm a Red Sox fan, this has been the house of cards that I knew was going to fall apart, falling apart quicker than I expected, but still falling apart. So I'm devastated if I'm a Red Sox fan. But based on how little it appeared Mookie wanted to stay and how much Red Sox ownership really wants to kind of put, even though they have a championship banner from 2018, I think they want to put those 2017, 2018, and 2019 teams in the past, have a fresh start. I agree with you that the luxury tax thing is a bit of a cop-out. I mean, I should have looked it up, but don't the Red Sox ownership also own a European soccer team? I mean, don't they own one of the most prestigious ones who just pulling in tons and tons of money?
Yeah, they own Liverpool. So it's the Fenway Sports Group. They own the Red Sox and Liverpool FC.
Yeah, so even in a bad year in Red Sox Nation, I'm sure that you can move a little bit of that money from Liverpool to help back you up, just like you can do with the Red Sox when Liverpool needs the help. And I mean, that team is not going anywhere either. And no doubt, I just showed everyone how little I know about international soccer that I couldn't even tell you which team that they owned or what league they played for. But either way, I think the Red Sox are just in such a hurry to move on and put all of this stuff behind them that I think that there was kind of this blanket. They thought the fans would trust them, be disappointed, but trust them that they were going to try to rebuild a team going forward and make it work. But just like you said, they didn't account for the visceral reaction, not only from the Red Sox fan base, but from baseball fans everywhere. I mean, this trade sending Mookie and David Price away and moving all of these pieces across Major League Baseball. We've said this for three straight years, that the Dodgers don't win at all, it's going to be a colossal disappointment. But I think that got magnified and probably multiplied by 10 after this trade, now that it's official. I mean, they have all the top talent playing in Los Angeles. And so just as a baseball fan who hopes for a little parity and hopes for a team other than the Dodgers to be in the NLCS or the NLDS every single year, it just makes you wonder and think to the Red Sox, did they do this trade because Los Angeles was the only team who could afford Mookie? You can't tell me that there weren't other teams out there who were interested. Why didn't they pursue any of those other teams? And why are the Red Sox willing to kind of burn it all down so much right now? What else is going on there that they're trying to move out of that clubhouse and try to rebuild is kind of my next question. But again, I'm not surprised if I'm a Red Sox fan. I'm just incredibly disappointed. And I think now I know 2020 is going to be rough and the Yankees are going to own the AL East, because I don't think the Rays will be back nearly as much as they were. The Orioles still aren't there. The Blue Jays aren't there. And we'll do previews here in a couple weeks. But the AL East officially belongs to the Yankees, just like it has for so long. It's back in the Bronx.
Yeah, that's interesting. I'm excited to do some team previews with you, because I don't know if I agree with your prediction on the Rays. I think the Rays might be back like they were. But there's no doubt that the Red Sox are in sell mode and the landscape of the AL East is significantly changed. And I think you're right. The Yankees are the game in town. If the Rays challenge the Yankees, it would be surprising. I think more likely you'd see the Rays, you know, settle in for a wild card slot, 5 to 8 games or 5 to 8 wins behind the Yankees by the end of the season when it's all said and done. But we'll see. As we've discussed, you're better predictions than I am. Two things on this. One, our mutual friend, Josh Goldman, host of the podcast and fellow Nationals fan with you, Pete, he texted us after this Mookie Betts trade was announced last week. He texted us a tweet thread from Michael Schur, who was a writer on The Office. More recently, created the shows Parks and Rec and The Good Place. And his Twitter handle is at Ken Tremendous. And he has this this not too long thread that says, "I'm a huge Red Sox fan, and I am so excited about their sub-luxury tax payroll moves and cost-conscious roster construction. That's why we're in this, fans. Amazing job by them. Gonna buy a jersey that says Lux Tax Reset on the back. Fenway Sports is only worth $7 billion, so you can understand them not wanting to pay an extra $12 million to have the best all-around player and most enjoyable personality they've ever had on the team for another year. Honestly, would I even enjoy watching Mookie Betts leg out a double or float back to his left and rob a home run, knowing that his luxury tax salary was decreasing John Henry's net profits? I don't think so. Too much psychic baggage thinking about that dent in the bottom line. Honestly, this whole thing is a weight off my shoulders. Now I can relax and enjoy hashtag Red Sox, hashtag baseball without the burden of knowing that the most exciting and charismatic player they have ever had was slightly weighing down the owner's personal profits for 1 year." So that, I think, encapsulates the general reaction that I've seen from Red Sox fans. But back to my my totally half-baked and probably terrible take, Pete. A sort of collective self-imposed embargo by sports reporters on contract terms until players clear medicals. What do you think?
I think it would be a great idea, but in today's age of social media, and not just social media, but all of these kind of one-off, quote-unquote, reporters and breaking news aficionados, I mean, it's not like ESPN, the Boston beat reporters and the Athletic beat reporters are the only ones who are going to blast this news out. There's going to be randos from BuzzFeed and Up and all of these random places that there's just no way these small, small fish in the largest pond, which is sports beat reporters, would ever agree to that, because now it's all about who can break it first. I mean, you go back to the devastating Kobe Bryant news and how much fake news we got. The fact that TMZ reported Kobe and his daughter were on the helicopter before the LA County Sheriff had notified Vanessa Bryant. And I mean, it's just, it's not that we as humans have become more cutthroat. It's just we now have the means to push information so much quicker. It is highlighting all the terrible things that we do in terms of wanting to gossip and wanting to be the first ones to divulge terrible, terrible news.
Yeah, that's a good point. All right. So it's a terrible idea. I mean, good idea.
It was a great idea.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. Fair enough. Okay. Well, we're almost out of time, Pete, but we need to talk about the XFL. So should we move on to our cleanup segment?
I think we should. Before we do that, was there any update on Jock Peterson that you came across with him potentially leaving LA as part of that trade? Did you see anything? Because I was looking for an update on that. I think he is still going to LA if this holds, right? Although he's in arbitration right now.
Yeah, I think that's right. So my understanding is that he was announced at the same time, or I guess those details came out at the same time, but the Jock Peterson to LA, or the Jock Peterson.
Sorry, the Angels.
Yeah. Jock Peterson to the Angels trade was technically separate from this 3-team trade. So,
but contingent on the first trade, right? The Dodgers only agreed to it as a contingency, right?
Yeah. So that's my understanding. But it was because it was separated. Now that this one trade is going through, it should be Peterson should still be going to the Angels. But let me while you talk about the XFL and your impressions, having watched a little bit of game action this weekend, let me just look this up and I'll come back to you when I find an answer.
Yeah, so for anyone who hasn't seen the XFL, if you constantly complain about NFL games are too long, this might help you out, even though the games this weekend went a little longer, but shorter play clocks, shorter halftime, fewer commercials, all replay reviews come from the booth. And while they're doing those reviews, they don't even cut away to commercial. They leave the cameras on inside the booth, which is fascinating to hear just kind of how transactional and how honestly fact-based a lot of these reviews are in these discussions between referees. It's a really fresh take on the NFL. I think if you like that stuff, the XFL is going to be good for you. I think the XFL, in terms of what we saw in 2000 when it came online versus what has happened now with Oliver Luck getting involved, it is a much more professional product than what I remember the XFL in 2000s being, which was all gimmicks and cheerleaders and he hate me and no fair catch, just brutal, brutal violence on the field. I really like the professional product that the XFL has put out there. They put a lot of butts in seats. I saw like 17,000 people were at that game in DC yesterday. I don't know what the TV ratings are, and honestly, the TV ratings are going to be what the XFL has to live and die on, because everybody knows the NFL doesn't make money from charging you $80 for parking. They make it from getting you to watch TV with the beer commercials. So I hope the XFL sticks around. I think that they've made some good improvements that the NFL should probably look at, like the changing the kickoff rules like you talked about, where players are standing still, the kicker is back on his own 30, kicks it off, no one can move until the receiver touches it, so you're getting less speed and less just raw contact. And then I also like that there's no just point afters on a touchdown, that you can either go for 1 point from the two, you can go from what, 2 points from the 5 yard line or 3 points from the 10. I mean, you're looking at big point swings.
Yeah,
where, it's pretty fun. Where you got to make a little more in-game decision making, which is kind of fun. But my fear is that there is just such football fatigue here in February that for diehard football fans, yeah, they're going to turn it on. I don't really know anyone who has made this the showcase of their weekend. It was background noise for a lot of people. For me, I was doing dishes this afternoon and had it on the iPad and was just kind of watching it. They are now competing with the exciting time in college basketball. They're competing with when the NBA is starting to kick up. And at this point, it's been like 24 weeks of football, and so there just isn't a whole lot left. It's a scout league for the NFL, which I think is why a lot of the players sign on to it, honestly, and a lot of those coaches that they're trying to break back into the NFL are breaking for the first time. So it's a good product. It's a professional product, but I just worry it's not going to make it because we're so tired of football at this point.
Yeah. No, I think that's right. I mean, I think it might have been a better idea to not have it start right after the Super Bowl, but rather to wait a month or two when people are really starting to feel the football-shaped hole in their heart.
And I mean, spring football is a big thing in every college community. And maybe if you hit the springtime before summer NFL practices kick up, you're probably worried about player safety then for anyone who gets signed by the NFL.
That's a good point, yeah.
If they could roll it back by a month even and start this in March, and then you're up against baseball, which I would argue probably the first month, that would really hurt Major League Baseball if a product like the XFL was available.
Yeah, that's probably true. But it also might be why they didn't do it then, because maybe they thought it would hurt them. My favorite part about the games from what I've seen is the kickoffs, because kickoffs always make me nervous. I mean, when I watch my favorite players receive kicks or punts, I'm just like, oh my goodness, these guys get
take a knee.
They get exactly like they get clocked. I remember watching Darren Sproles just get absolutely leveled in a game a couple years ago. And he, of course, was concussed by that, had entered the protocol, missed a few games, all of that. But it looked like it was the kind of hit that could have killed a man. Yeah. And it's because these guys, you know, get to start on the 30-yard line and start running from almost the opposite end of the field and then hit a guy full speed, often, you know, helmet or pad first into the other guy's head, even if it's unintentional. And that is a recipe for death, or at the very least grave injury. What the XFL is doing is having players line up 5 yards apart from each other, or is it 10? It's not much, right? They're lining up.
It's on the 30 and it's either the 20 or the 25. I can't remember. Yeah. Let me look.
And they line up across from each other, and then they can't go until the football is either past the line of the kicking team, the guys who are lined up, or the receiver catches it, but I think it's still, it's past the line, right? And then they can go and they try to block each other. So it does a couple of things. One, it makes it so those guys are not at full speed by the time the ball carrier is tackled. And two, it really kind of opens up for more exciting possibilities for big special teams plays, because it's a little bit easier, you know, for your blockers, if you're the receiving team, for your blockers to pick up those, the kicking team guys, and open up some lanes for you. So it just becomes a lot more interesting in that respect as well, and games can hinge more on those special teams plays, which often in the NFL are just perfunctory. I mean, it's exciting when special teams touchdowns happen, but they don't happen that often, right?
They did yesterday in the XFL, though, right? There was a blocked punt for a touchdown. There was a lot of stuff.
Exactly.
The 30 and the 35-yard line is where the two teams
Okay, yeah, so 5 yards apart from each other. And the kicking team, when can they move? Is it when the ball passes the plane of their of the 35-yard line?
No one can move until the returner fields the ball.
Okay, got it. Yeah, and then they can go and engage each other. And yeah, it's just way better. It's a way better system. And I hope the NFL implements this like this year, because, you know, punt returns and kick returns are the most dangerous play statistically in terms of concussion, concussions received. And if the NFL could change that, that alone would make me feel a lot better about watching these games. So
I agree. What are your thoughts on all of the hot mics on officials and sideline interviews? Like, we're seeing a lot of access, a lot of quote unquote transparency. What are your thoughts on all that?
I love it. This is the way that sports are going. I think broadcasts have to be more immersive. They have to make us feel like we're in the game and we are a part of it and able to engage with the players. I mean, the fact that, you know, yesterday, for example, we saw a kicker miss a field goal and then be interviewed right after the fact. This wasn't Cody Parkey with a double doink and then, you know, going on the Today Show the next week to talk about how resilient he was. This was a guy missing a shot and then a sideline reporter being like, tell me what's going through your head right now. You know, tell me why you missed it, et cetera. And I mean, on the one hand, it's I guess like poor guy. On the other hand though, like, I think he maintained his composure pretty well. And like, you know, these guys
did well. Then he hit a 55 yarder later on.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it's not the first time these guys have known failure. Right. And I think if I could see my favorite players be interviewed on the spot right after their big moments, that'd be super exciting. I love it. What about you?
I love it. I think that they're going to pull the reins back on it. Cause you even watched, I can't even remember. I'm sorry, who the evening game was yesterday. And they benched whoever that starting quarterback was. And magically that guy didn't get interviewed, but they had interviewed all these people before he got benched. And so I think the XFL is going to have to work with these broadcasting companies a little to determine when interviews are appropriate. Cause you also saw the F bomb get dropped on a hot mic yesterday.
Didn't get dunked
in time. And so I think the XFL is going to have to clamp down on this a little. I am not as into these sideline interviews as I am hearing the conversations between officials. I thought that is really interesting to hear what the replay booth is looking at, where he's sitting there with his Xbox controller, moving it back and forth.
Yeah.
I like hearing what the officials on the field are trying to work through. I mean, that's why guys like Mike Pereira and Gene Steratore still have a job with Fox and CBS.
Yeah, for sure.
Is they get to tell you what's going on, but they're not in it. They're sitting in a comfortable studio. So I think that is really, really interesting.
My bold prediction is that they won't scale that back, because I think the XFL right now, Oliver Luck, I'm sure knows this. The XFL needs to capitalize on everything they do that is different from the NFL.
Yeah.
And so all the media attention that they get from, you know, how punts and kickoffs are different, or 2 and 3 point tries after touchdowns, or faster play clocks, all of these things that differentiate them or distinguish them from the NFL, I think are going to be things that they're going to want to play up. And so, you know, even if there is some friction, even if there are some FCC violations with F-bombs being dropped on air, I think they're going to still roll with it. Now, well, I mean, they might do something like, you know, give, maybe this already exists. Maybe this is why the benched quarterback was not interviewed. Maybe teams have discretion to say, like, this guy's off limits for now. He's, you know, he's having a hard time. I don't know. But I'm guessing that they'll lean into it, if anything, because there's a lot of chatter that I've seen already on Twitter, for example, about how different this is and how cool it is.
Yeah. Yeah. I think you're absolutely right. I would be terrified if I was an NFL head coach, though, and they are interviewing my players coming off the field in the third quarter. You're like, get out of here.
Yeah. Well, especially these short play clocks, like, you know, you got to have time to talk to your players and do game planning, stuff like that. So that's an interesting dynamic to it as well. I mean, if there is pushback, it's probably going to come from the coaches, right? When we're like, you know, these sideline reporters are getting in the way. I need to talk to my kicker about, you know, what the longest kick is he thinks he can make right now in the wind. And instead he's doing an interview about the last one he missed, you know, so that'd be frustrating.
Yeah. Yeah, it's going to be interesting. I just wish that they would fix the timing. I'm just not interested, honestly, in watching professional football right now. I love football, but I am switching into March Madness and gearing up for baseball season. That is my sports focus right now.
I know.
It's exhausting.
Well, let's start our team previews next week, Pete. I think it's not too early to do that. It's never too early to talk baseball.
Catchers report this weekend, my friend.
That's right. Yeah. Let's get it started. We should wrap it up here for time purposes. I want to circle back. Speaking of baseball, I said I would do some digging on the Peterson trade. I don't see anything about that being finalized. I will say, however, I was on the TrueBlueLA.com. That's the Dodgers SB Nation site. There, the article about the Mookie Betts trade finally going through is up. The first few comments do not bear repeating on this podcast because of the profanity in them.
Family show.
So basically what ended up having this go through was the Dodgers added a prospect to it for the Dodgers. So in addition to Alex Verdugo, they're now sending Jeter Downs, who's the number 5 prospect in the organization. So that's pretty significant. A lot of the comments
this worked out really well for the Red Sox.
Well,
they got fan backlash, but they get more now. Wow.
Yeah. And I mean, people, so here's some comments. Now, granted, these are all Dodgers fans, so just bear that in mind. But you know, someone says, I'm absolutely livid at how this ended. Maybe it's petty, but it is what it is. I hope Friedman never deals with Bloom or Henry ever again. The way Boston went about this is an absolute and total disgrace. I hope they like Jeter Downs because their reputation just took a huge blow. I have to say, as a fan of neither team, I don't like strongly dislike the Dodgers. I do kind of dislike the Red Sox. But as a fan of neither team, as someone who's relatively impartial, I think that comment is pretty accurate. Like the Red Sox, you know, made a trade, had a big public relations backlash, tried to back out of the trade on what seemed like false pretenses, given that they're still going to get the prospect they were complaining about, and then went back to the bargaining table to ask for more to try to kind of soften the impact to their fan base. That seems pretty tacky to me.
Totally agreed. Totally agreed.
Well, on that note,
I am really interested if Jock Peterson ends up going to the Angels. I know I was telling you and Josh, I think the Angels are sneaky good.
Yeah.
If Jock Peterson ends up going there,
they are probably going to be my favorite team to watch this year. They're going to be a lot of fun.
Yeah. I'm already thinking our family likes to go out to San Diego in the summer, and I'm thinking maybe I need to drive up to Anaheim to watch an Angels game. I mean, the addition of Tony Rendon, which crushed me when he left DC, and then Mike Trout, Otani, like I mentioned, Rendon, Jock Peterson, like this team could be really, really good.
I totally agree.
Or they could do what the Angels do every other year and give it all away.
Also possible. Anything's possible. All right, man.
The beauty of spring training.
We will wrap it up there. Thanks so much for coming on and talking sports. Let's do it again next week. We'll start talking baseball. I'll be in touch with you, Pete, about some team previews and get that on a schedule. And then we'll start turning those out, if not next week, shortly thereafter. So, all right. Is that all we got, Pete?
That's all we got, my friend.
Okay, thanks so much for listening to another episode of Third String Podcast. If you like what we did, send us a note. thirdstring@vernacularpodcast.com. 3RD string@vernacularpodcast.com. Until next time, have a great week.